I now call this regular meeting of Amesburg Town Council to order. Could you please stand for a moment of silent reflection? Thank you. Is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest on the public meeting agenda? Okay, seeing none, we will move to item four, minutes of previous meeting. Councilor Fryer?
I'll move to adopt items one and two.
Thank you. Second, Councilor Milosh. Is there any questions on those minutes? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor? Carried. And that brings us to item five, presentations.
Thank you, Your Worship. The first presentation is a donation to the Amesburg Food Bank by the Town of Amesburg and the IBW, Local 636. If I can get Your Worship and BJ Wilder from IBW 636 to come forward, please, and Ms. Janet Anderson. Right in the front so we can get a good view. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening, this donation is presented to the Amesburg Food Bank as a result of savings realized by the town and its union IBW. The town and the union were able to save 2 days of arbitration costs on labor relation issues, and as a result, the town and the union agreed to contribute a portion of these savings to a needy charity in this town, the Amesburg Food Bank. Please join me in thanking the union and our town for making this donation. Thank you very much. Janet, do you have any words you want to say?
Yes, I do.
Can you go to the mic, please?
Hi, everyone. Yes, I would like to thank the town of Amesburg and the union for all the donations. And we certainly will put it to good use. We service over 50 families a month now, and we definitely could use the money. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Can I get a motion to receive the, Councilor Milosh and Councilor Levine? All those in favor? Carried. Brings us to 5.2. Gordon Orr and Lynette Bain from TWEPI have a presentation for us.
Okay, good evening, Your Worship, Mayor DiCarlo, and members of Amesburg Town Council. My name is Gordon Orr. I'm the CEO of Tourism Windsor Essex Peel Island, and I'm joined tonight by Lynette Bain, our Vice President of Tourism Programs and Development. And also with us is our Director of Marketing and Special Events, Mr. Chris Racine. Tonight we're here as part of a commitment that was made 5 years ago when we assumed the leadership roles of Tourism Windsor Essex Peely Island. We promised that we would attend council meetings on a regular basis, not only at the city and county council tables, but also at the local level, at each town council meeting. This is the third of 8 visits that we're doing. For example, we had the pleasure of appearing before Windsor City Council on April 25th, and just last week, we appeared before Essex County Council, and tonight, after this session's over, we're headed to Kingsville Town Council. Now, we do this for a few reasons. First, we want to make sure that our elected officials are better informed about the importance of tourism as an industry and our activities designed to derive our fair share of the tourism market. And secondly, we want to provide you with the opportunity to ask any questions that you may have of us in this forum provided here tonight. Tonight we're here with the latest edition of our 2016-2017 visitor guide, which is hot off the press, and we have a brief PowerPoint presentation highlighting our 2015 year review and our areas of focus for 2016 and some year-over-year key performance indicators. Before we start the PowerPoint presentation, we'd like to remind Council that tourism is a significant economic generator for this region. Our latest data indicates our annual visitation is 4.8 million visitors a year, who generate close to $500 million, that's billion with a B, in economic activity, and they help support over 16,000 jobs. So now I'll start the PowerPoint presentation. First of all, our vision and mission. You can see there that we want to be a top of mind destination offering authentic and diverse visitor experiences. Our mission, in part, is a tourism industry collaborative committed to enhancing the region's economy and quality of life. Our mandate comprises of four core functions: marketing communications, visitor services, event attraction, and product and program development. You can see there our organizational governance. We have a board of directors, 11-member board. It's a mix of politicians and stakeholders. You can see on our executive committee there, our chair is Mayor Nelson Santos, of course, the mayor of Kingsville. And we're also represented by a county council with Mayor Patterson from Leamington, and of course, Warden Tom Bain. Lynette?
Thank you, Gordon. When we look back at what we've accomplished over as the United Visitor Industry over 2015, we put together a comprehensive document, which we handed out earlier, this year in review document. We also circulated that to council in early March. We want to highlight just a few of these noteworthy accomplishments. For awards, we were the recipient of the 2015 OTMPC, that's Ontario Tourism Marketing Partnership Corporation Partnership Award, for a partnership with the Art Gallery of Windsor and the Windsor Endowment for the Arts, and that was called Possible Futures, What is to be Done, and it was a celebration of the Windsor-Essex Triennial of Contemporary Art. We were also winner of the EDCO, Economic Developers Council of Ontario, Regionalism and Cross-Border Collaboration Marketing Award for the launch of the Henry Ford Driving and Audio Tours. We were thrilled to develop a new product in destination development, getting our farmers markets to work together. Highlighting our city and county regional markets through a microsite and a joint marketing campaign with some funding from the local food fund. We also put together a Taste of Place workshop focusing on culinary tourism, making this region as a food and drink destination, ensuring market readiness and the importance of growing and serving local. For event development, we partnered with the Detroit Metro Convention Visitor Bureau and Caesars Windsor to take part in the American Society of Association Executives Convention in Detroit, where over 5,000 meeting planners converged in Detroit for the first time. So we exhibited at Cobo Hall and helped sponsor their golf outing. Our marketing campaign, 60 Days, 60 Reasons, was a very successful social media campaign that ran over the summer, focusing on our key areas of food and drink. And then the Best of Windsor Essex campaign was also a social media campaign designed to help locals tell us the best of the best in Windsor, in their opinion, in a variety of categories to help promote to the visitors where the locals like to go. Our 2016-17 marketing plan and destination development strategy had four major areas of focus: arts and culture, looking at cultural districts and garden tourism, outdoor adventure, two-wheeled adventures, and that's cycling and motorcycling, as well as waterfront, which are products such as beaches, fishing, and birding, food and drink, it's the culinary, the wine industry, and a new product that we're launching in June called Barrels, Bottles, and Brews, a brewery and distillery trail. And entertainment, which is a staple with gaming, events, and shopping. Our current creative campaign, something we're very proud of, it's if you're ever tweeting about Windsor Essex, we want you to hashtag plenty of reasons, recognizing that we are blessed in Windsor Essex and Paley Island with numerous tourism assets and no one iconic attraction. So we've decided to highlight plenty of reasons to visit and why you'll love this place.
Our 2016-2020 strategic plan. In 2015, we held a variety of focused stakeholder groups with members of our stakeholders, of course, our board and our staff, and we came up with our board endorsed 2016-2020 strategic plan. It centers around primarily three strategic directions, each with a series of strategies to help drive implementation and the outcomes desired. Obviously, there you can see growing the tourism industry and visitor experiences, maximizing key industry partnerships and relationships, and building our capacities to support the tourism industry. There you have some year-over-year figures from 2014 to 2015. Our hotel figures are very encouraging and seeing some positive growth. And on the marketing side, you can see there that our website and our social media channels have also gone up as well. As we mentioned earlier, we do have our new visitor guide, which is our official information piece that we use in the region. It grew to 84 pages this year based on demand of advertisers and listing of companies. We print 110,000 copies of these guides, and we distribute them through Ontario, Michigan, and Ohio. And then the last thing we'd like to leave with you is our 2016 annual general meeting. We'll be hosting that on June 16th at Caesars Windsor. We have a very special guest speaker that Lynette and I have had the opportunity to hear at a couple of conferences that we've attended, and most recently in Detroit at their annual general meeting for their convention visitors bureau. Josh Linker is a best-selling author and Detroit champion who is a key influencer, helped shape the renaissance of Detroit's IT sector. Please save the date, more information will follow. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention the partnerships that we have with the great town of Amherstburg. Key among them, of course, is with your culture and tourism division, led by Ann Rhoda and ably assisted by Jennifer Ebering. Also your recreation division, Rick Daly's Dynamite. We really enjoy the Welcome Center partnership that we have, that you provide us the wonderful structure there on Sandwich, and we provide the staffing during the summer month. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention your CAO, John Michelli, who's certainly a tourism champion for this entire region, which we appreciate. So we thank you for your time this evening, and more importantly, for continuing to invest in tourism and your support of Tourism Windsor SXP Atlanta. Thank you very much. That's one of our staff members trying to applaud back there. Thank you. Oh, here we go. Please. It's staycation this summer, everybody. Enjoy your own backyard. Spend some money locally.
Is there any questions or comments? Okay, looks like they're going to get off easy and get out to Kingsville. Can I get a motion to receive then? Councilor Bean and Councilor Fryer. All those in favor, carried, and thank you very much.
Mayor, we want you to know we ate at Maria's tonight. We had a wonderful dinner there, and we told them we had to get here on time, and the service was excellent. So is their clubhouse, by the way. Thank you very much.
That brings us to 6.1, the pavilion rental fee waiver. Dr. Alan Halowski.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'm representing the Amherstburg Fort Malden Horticultural Society this evening, and I'm sure that the council and Your Worship is quite familiar with the amount of energy and effort and volunteer hours that the Horticultural Society puts into keeping Amherstburg a fairly beautiful community. We also participate in putting on the garden tour every year, of which generates a fair bit of income, of which we then turn around and donate towards the town of Amherstburg. Last year we donated $3,500 towards Community in Bloom. As you know, we use the Toddy Jones Park as a staging area for this, and the council would like to have the fee removed or waived for the use of this as we put this thing on. As you know, it brings a fair amount of tourism to the community, and we believe that it's an asset, and we would like to have that waived if that's possible.
Councilor Cluja.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Mr. Noski, is it?
Yes.
I just wanted to thank you for coming before council, and I'm prepared to make a motion to receive the delegation and also to make a motion to direct administration to waive the rental fee waiver for the use of the pavilion at Toddy Jones Park for the Horticultural Society use on June 17th and 18th, 2016 during the garden tour, and also that we refund our application fee up to $150. If I could have a seconder, I'd like to speak on the motion, please.
Sure. Councillor Fryer is a second, and Councillor Boucher, you can speak on that.
I'm well aware. I sit on the Parks Committee, so I'm well aware of what your organization does, and it's phenomenal. You have members from your Horticultural Society that actually sit on our Parks Committee. They also sit on the Communities in Bloom Committee, and as you stated, they donated $3,500, I believe, to the flower basket program, and they work weekly on specific areas in the King's Navy Yard Park and they decorate the planters during the winter months. And it's just, I know with the assistance of the union and the agreement with them, they allowed all of us to go into the parks and the boulevards and to spruce up everything for the Communities in Bloom project. And as a result of that, well, one of the reasons is that we won the 5 blooms. And you provide the education to the public at their meetings on what to plant, how to plant them. And you really go a long way to promote the healthy environment for the town of Amherstburg, and we really appreciate that. So that's why I'm making the motion.
Okay, is there any other comments? Councilor Melange?
Yes, I had the opportunity this week to speak with the chair of the Ontario Communities in Bloom, and he could speak more highly of Amherstburg and how it looks and the tours, and really supporting this, but where we go seems like we're talked about as far as with respect to the Communities in Bloom and garden tours. It's a good job.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Did you need it now? Do you need it later?
I just need it now.
Okay. If you could give that to the clerk when you have a minute, I think. Do you need it now? Or?
That's okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, all those in favor? Carried. Thank you, Mr. Halowski.
Great. Thank you, Your Worship.
And that brings us to 6.2. There is some questions from Mr. Lozon and Mr. Warren.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, councilors, guests. We're here to address, obviously, in regards to the Ontario Fire Marshal's report released on April 11th, 2016. We want everyone to understand we're not here to instill fear in our town, as some people have stated in the media. We also want everyone to know that it was a current fire chief, Al Rehan, that requested the UFM come in and do the current audit on the Amherstburg Fire Department and not us, as stated in the Riverton Times by the Amherstburg Fire Association President Tom Kelly. Okay. We're here only to bring light to our concerns with regards to the liability and costs that would be incurred should serious injury or a fatality occur to a firefighter if individuals who may not be trained and educated are in charge of a fire scene. In regards the Ontario Fire Marshal's report under section 5.24, organizational structure number 34, it states for fire captains, it is further noted there are gaps between job specifications and completion of required training and education. And I restate that, required training and education. The following questions are our concerns, what our concerns are and what have been in the past. Specifically, what is the gap that the Ontario Fire Marshal identified in regards to the required training and education for the captains? What are the minimum qualifications for a captain in the province of Ontario in the eyes of the Ontario Fire Marshal and the Ontario Fire College? Is there a recognized requirement of the OFM and the Ontario Fire College to be a company officer or a captain in Ontario? And if so, how many of the 12 Amherstburg Fire and Rescue captains, along with the current chief, deputy chief, and fire prevention officer, meet those qualifications? And when did the town of Amherstburg's administration first become aware that the captains and the Amherstburg Fire and Rescue Service may not have the required training and education? Thank you.
Okay, Chief.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, to the delegation. Assistant Chief Tom's going to answer the first one, and I'll answer the next three questions.
Your first question in regards to specifically what is the gap that the OFM identified in regards to the required training and education for captains. What we did is your questions we sent to the Office of the Fire Marshal for the response. Since you were asking what the gap was and the OFM did the report, we thought it would only be right that they answered the question. What they came back with was the question poised requires a response that is in context to the section. As such, the OFMEM will not provide a response other than to state the section needs to be viewed in its entirety and in context to the review process. And what I'll do is expand, Keith, on your statement regarding section 34 of the report. The assessment further noted that the captain's position does not have a job description. We're aware of that. There are gaps between the job specifications and completion of required training and education. Those are two separate things. They're not talking about captains. The captains have had no job description. The points in those articles were all separate points. They weren't talking about captains in each of those points. The only thing they said about captains was the captain's position does not have a job description. I followed up with the OFM just to ensure that was the case, and that's what they came back with. And in their answer to your question, you have to read the entire section. The entire section was not just about captains. It was about the entire department itself. So the question having to do with the gap wasn't just with captains. It was a gap in training for all job specifications. So without a job description, we can't comment on the gap in the training for captains. There is not a job description.
Okay, my understanding of it, and I've read the report numerous times, is the Ontario Fire Marshal come in and said there's a gap, that your guys don't have the required training and education, whether it be for captain, firefighter, whatever. Did they not give you what that, to me that's a standard. They're saying you guys need to be here and you're here. So to them not give you specifically what that gap is, to me doesn't make sense in the whole understanding of what they did, like when they came in to evaluate it.
You've read the report.
Yes.
We've got the same report.
Yeah.
So from the captain's perspective, they've mentioned there is no job description. That's something I'm working on improving.
I understand that there's no job description. Clearly understand that.
I think
they're still saying there's a gap in required training and education for your entire department. That's the way I would take it. If you're saying it's not for captains, it's for your entire department, which includes captains and firefighters. Is that correct?
What I can tell you is maybe when the chief answers question two, that might help you. If not, we can come back to it.
Okay.
All right, question two. You asked, what are the minimum qualifications for a captain in the province of Ontario in the eyes of the OFM and the Ontario Fire College? Their answer is, at this time, there is no standard that defines the minimum qualifications for a fire captain in the province of Ontario.
Okay.
There is no standard.
Okay, so again, that to me wouldn't make sense if they've come in and said there's a gap between training and education. So they're identifying that there's a gap. So if there was no gap, then they would say there's no standard. There wouldn't be, but they have clearly defined a gap. They're saying that your guys require this training and education, correct? So to say that there's no standard, then their whole evaluation of it doesn't make sense.
You're taking the content in isolation, you can't.
I'm not taking it in isolation at all, sir.
It's a three-page answer to that particular question. At the end of the day, there are no standards for any fire department that they are required to meet. Every municipality sets its own. The town of Amherstburg does that. The city of Windsor does it. The office of the fire marshal has no standards.
So
they can't hold
there's
up with standards.
No required that training and education to be a firefighter. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying to you exactly what their answer is. There is no standard that defines the minimum qualifications for a fire captain in the province of Ontario.
So then anybody could be a fire captain, is what you're saying?
It's what the municipality, that department is in.
So then the municipality would hold the liability if an individual...
This isn't a debate.
I'm just trying to understand the question, sir. That's all I'm trying to do here. He's giving me an answer. I'm trying to understand how he's saying there's no gap or there's no required training, but the Ontario Fire Marshal has clearly said there's a gap with training and education. So they're saying... Your entire department requires training and education. And he's saying there's no standard, but I don't know how the entire fire marshal could say that they require that training, but there's no standard. Do you understand how that doesn't make sense to me?
That would be a question for the Ontario Fire Marshal's office, which you can contact and ask them, because we did, and we were given that response.
Well, I again, on the Ontario Fire Marshal's website, there are qualifications for a firefighter level one, firefighter level two, and company officer level one, company officer level two, and a full department officer. So on the Ontario Fire Marshal's website, there are qualifications required for that. That's why I'm trying to understand what he's talking about, because if I, and I've gone onto the website, we have it, and we can show you it, is it tells you what you need to be a in order to be at that level. So in order to be a firefighter level one, firefighter level two, or going to company officer, you have to have a level one, level two, and a full diploma. Is that true? Like,
no, that's absolutely not true. The city of Windsor does not use the fire college whatsoever for its officer program. The city has its own training division. They put together their own program. They take none of the college courses. They don't have certificates from the college.
They're all qualified on their own.
Yes, every major city does that.
So your understanding is they've taken the programs from the Ontario Fire College, and again, I have ties to Windsor Fire as well, sir, that they take courses from that Ontario Fire College and implement their training. Now, yes, they train their own captains in Windsor, where most of your municipal departments will send their guys away to be trained. So within Windsor's, they've adopted the NFPA regulations to meet those qualifications to be a company officer. That's the way I understand it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but that's the way I understand it, that they've adopted those standards, right? Those NFPA standards, and the NFPA has clearly laid out what the standards are for a volunteer fire department, what they are for a full-time fire department, and then within those standards, it clearly defines what you have to have to meet, what qualifications you have to be at a certain level, whether it be a firefighter or a company officer.
Again, there is no standard in the province of Ontario that has not been for many, many years. Everything
I don't know if the Ontario Fire Marshal is posting on the website then.
That is their answer you're reading.
That is their answer.
Mm-hmm. I'll write them specifically and ask them in regards to that.
The letter that we received, the town of Amherstburg received, has been posted on our website, so you do have access to the answers, just like everybody in the community will have access to the answers from the Ontario Fire Marshal's office. The Fire Marshal's office, it was their report, it was their recommendations. 27 recommendations came out from the Ontario Fire Marshal's office. This council has wholeheartedly and fully supported our senior administration and our fire chief and the deputy chief to implement those 27 recommendations. So we as a town understand and take it very seriously to move forward on those 27 recommendations. So if you have comments or concerns with regards to the Fire Marshal's report, it's their report and it's their response. That's what
I find it to be like, for them to come in and tell you there's a gap, but not define to this town what that gap is and what that required training and education is, would be like me hiring an electrician to come into my house,
Mr. Lozon,
for concerns,
that's,
and he leaves without telling me those concerns.
Okay, well, that's your opinion, and our chief and our deputy chief have addressed any concerns the town may have with our fire protection, with the OFM, and they are satisfied that we're meeting whatever requirements we have. If you disagree with the fire marshal's office, then by all means, contact the fire marshal's office and work it out with them. Councilor Puja?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you to our fire chief. So, council now, we've received a report from the fire marshal with 27 recommendations that we must abide by, we must enact with our policies. And so now you want us to believe there's no standard for firefighters and no job description for these firefighters. I mean, that's unbelievable. So how does each member of the Amherstburg Fire Department go into a fighting fire and fight the fire and try to keep themselves safe and other people safe if they don't know what their job description is and there's no standard?
Through your worship to the councilor, we're in the process of reviewing all the standards and the job descriptions for all the positions that we have here. All our officers are trained in incident management. They're all trained in incident command. They know what to do when they get to a fire. They know that somebody's going to take command, somebody's going to start giving orders. They're all trained that way. The fact that the Office of the Fire Marshal says there is no standard, it doesn't mean a whole lot to me here, because we will make sure that these people are trained, and they're trained to the best practices in our industry. Almost everybody in our industry uses the same training manuals to train our officers.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for that, Chief. But as a follow-up, what type of liability does that put us in? If I mean, it's very clear that we don't have the job descriptions, we don't have the standards, and that when each of the men or women go for training, are they being documented that they're getting this type of training on this date? Because like this really, really scares me actually.
I'll answer the last part first. The training is very well documented. We have, one of the things that we've done right now is I have 8 officers and 4 senior firefighters taking a program called Blue Card. It's an incident management program. It'll take them almost a year to get through it all, but it's one of the tools that we use to make sure their skills are honed. And part of that, I'm going to have Galvin answer it.
Sure. Through you, Mayor. And if you call up the top of page 3, if you could, if you look at the grouping of the items there, they're generally, I would put them in the realm of more housekeeping documentation exercise issues. They talk about a job description, a performance review process, practices and policies and procedures. Those are all related to documentation. It doesn't say that they didn't have the training. It says that there's gaps between the specs and the completion of the required training. And that really goes to the core of saying there's no documentation for that. Doesn't necessarily mean they weren't or they don't. And I defer, of course, to the chief and the deputy chief in terms of the adequacy of the training and what the training is. But when you look at those 4 bullet points, they certainly all have the same common thread, which is really comes down to documentation. And I've been in a number of audits before, and that's not uncommon to have documents that aren't there, or the record keeping certainly isn't there. And I know I've had discussions with both the chief and the deputy chief, and that's on their top priority list to make sure that everything is documented. So when things do come, or the OFM does come in, that you have them say, here's our book, here's our manual, here's our documentation. I don't, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that simply wasn't the case when they came in. So when I look at those 4 bullet points, and certainly in the section of the report that it appears, it really does come down to the housekeeping documentation of the exercises and making sure that you have all your books in order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Councillor Puget, many of our firefighters, most of our firefighters have firefighter level 1 and 2 already. What happened? The OFM changed from a company officer type Ontario program to NFPA in the last few years. And there was a grandfathering clause where many people could apply to get grandfathered under the NFPA certification. Many of our firefighters are certified level 1 and 2 firefighters, as are many of our officers, company officers. There seems to be a misunderstanding that we do not have a trained fire service. We have a very well-trained fire service. Have there been issues? Yes, there have, and they're being addressed. We have a very good fire service in the town of Amherstburg.
And thank you, Deputy Fire Chief, for that. But as you can see, as a councillor, it is our job to make sure that our municipality is protected, our firefighters are protected, our residents are protected from any fire calls. And in this society where people sue for, you know, a lot of reasons, you can see why I'm really concerned when it says, back up there where we were just before, no documentation to prove that they have those qualifications. And I'm not pointing fingers at you, at either one of you. I know you're doing a phenomenal job, and I thank you for that. It's just that you can understand where a counselor is coming from when we ask these questions and we're not getting the answers that we want to hear.
They're all valid concerns. We all want the same thing. We want the best, most trained fire service that we can have. There's a cost to that. When I first came here, the fire training budget was $5,000, cut to 0. You have to understand, as counselors, there's a cost in this business for training, and it's an expensive cost. But this is what you need moving forward. We're looking for a training officer. There's a reason for that. A lot of these issues are going to be corrected with a full-time training officer. Everybody's going to be doing the same training. We're going to be getting people different courses. But there's a cost to that. And this is a good thing that's happened in the grand scheme of things in moving the department forward. And this is what I'm hoping. After tonight, we can all move forward, put this to bed,
and do what we all do good. This is taking up a large amount of time. We know what needs to be done now, and there's a cost to it. I'm glad this is in front of council, because when you make decisions on a go-forward basis, you can understand where we're coming from and why we need to get people trained. So certainly there's issues. We're moving already on getting those situations, that stuff taken care of.
And further to that, Councilor, if you recall, that's almost a year ago that I sat in front of you, and I told you then that one of the things I wanted was to bring the OFM in and have a review of this department. So I knew where we were at from an administrative point of view. I knew that things were lacking and things were missing. We've done that. We know where we have to go. We're in the process of putting the plan together, and we'll have the report to you hopefully at the next meeting. But you can rest assured, we're not sitting back and just looking at this. We're implementing it.
Councilor Pryor, you're good. Councilor
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to touch on what Lee said, and I had a question. I don't think we've had too many major incidents where we've had to bring in somebody to investigate each fire. And if you could, Lee or Al, give council a representation on the years of service, the average what we have in Amherstburg right now.
Are you talking about the amount of fires we have on an annual basis? Or?
No, the firemen that are here. What's the average years of service that we have right now with our fire department? I'm pretty sure it's pretty high.
Well, you know, and what? I'm looking at people that are over 45 years to a few years and everything in between. I said at a meeting with them not that long ago, I've learned more from these people since I've been here than they'll learn from me. The dedication and passion of this group is amazing. The fire, what it costs the fire service here is dirt cheap for what you get. Is it perfect? No. No fire service is perfect. But we bared our dirty laundry out by having the OFM come in, and trust me, it's not going to be any different than any other department. We're going to fix what we have here. It's like a fishbowl right now. But I'm hoping, Keith and Dave, moving forward, it's a good department. You were in it for a number of years, and it couldn't have been that bad. You were part of a service with your brothers and sisters. The social media stuff has to stop. The criticism has to stop. That last picture that was in the paper, that comments were made about the fire captain with 40 years, I was there. This is an exterior fire with some really different things. There's fuel tanks in the area. He did an amazing job directing the firefighters, not only to knock down the fire, but cool those tanks. With the wind at their back, they were strategically placed in an area where he was at no danger of taking in any smokers.
The only question was, the captain prepared with all his PPE?
He wasn't, but he was in a situation where he didn't require it, and that's the thing.
He was the second man on the hose line.
He was not the second man on the hose line. There was two firefighters. What I'm trying to say by this is, okay, it's time to move on.
So my point is, I think, and Lee, you touched on it, I don't have very much experience fighting fires at all, but I know, looking around the room, I know many people. Jim Ouellette, I did Taekwondo when I was a little kid with. There's a lot of kids around here, a lot of men and women around here that do care a lot and have spent a lot of years training records. I think we haven't done things proper in a while, and I think that's why both of you guys are on board. Administrationally, I think hopefully with the OFM coming down, and like you said, airing our dirty laundry, let's figure out what's things that we may have been trained to do 45 years ago may have changed now a bit. So now we're moving forward and evolving. It's never going to sit still, and this is the way you only do this. So I appreciate everyone showing up tonight. I appreciate the comments made by Keith and I really do hope that, like you said, it is a moving on process where we're going to be able to look at everything and say, okay, we appreciate the comments, we appreciate the criticism, let's move forward.
Mr. Warren, you had a question?
Yeah, this was directed to the chief. You mentioned that the officers are qualified and it's documented. Or the OFM report saying that there's no documentation to prove this gap.
We sent their documentation off to the fire college, to have them recognized under NFPA.
Okay.
They sent us back a letter stating that they accepted their documentation.
So they're grandfathered?
Yes.
Okay. One other question. So NFPA is the recognized standard that Amherstburg Fire Department is recognizing, correct?
NFPA is the standard we use, yes.
Okay. So blue card that you mentioned about training the eight captains and the four firefighters, it's going to take up to a year. So I would assume that until they're trained fully in the blue card, that the liabilities would be much greater than when they are trained, correct?
No, not at all. This is just another tool in their tool bag that's reinforcing what they've already learned and how to apply it.
The officer's role is a supervisor role, correct?
That is correct.
And a competent supervisor, they won't be in for another year.
No, I never said that at all. They are all competent supervisors. Now, I'm offering them more training so they can hone their skills. This isn't because, they're not doing this because they have to do it. They're doing it because I asked them to do it.
Okay, motion to receive the delegation. Deputy Mayor? Well, we can still receive the delegation. Councilor Millar, second. All those in favor? Carried. Councilor Pouget?
So, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to make a statement. I know that, you know, we don't want to go back to the past. We say it over and over again. And some people want us to believe that we just have to move on. But we can't move on until we actually know what the problem is and we deal with the problem. And only then can we move on. And I want to thank these two gentlemen for coming here tonight and bringing these concerns to us. And if it hadn't been for those two gentlemen, we wouldn't even be here tonight. We probably wouldn't even know that there were significant problems on the Amherstburg Fire Department.
Okay. Any other comments? Seeing none, let's move on. 7.1, accounts payable. Councilor Pryor?
I'll move them back on the motion.
And second, Councilor Melange, is there any questions on the accounts payable? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor? Carried. And here I will bring forward the engineering report, engineering and public works supplementary agenda. Okay, is there any questions or motion on the report? Councilor Frey?
I'll move the report.
Thank you. Second is Councilor Levine. So any questions on the report? Councilor Melange?
Thank you. I know it's Rebecca who answered the question here. You talk about deficiencies, but you know there's a recommendation to now go into the maintenance period, but there are still some lingering deficiencies. Street lights, poles that aren't going to be in until the end of the month. Does the 1 year kick in at that point in time, or does it kick in now? Is there a grace period on some of the unfinished work that's going to give us that extra month?
Internet.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, there was quite a few deficiencies when we first did the walkthrough. However, Amoco worked through all the major deficiencies, what we consider the deficiencies that would be required to be completed before we accepted them into the 1 year maintenance period. All the underground infrastructure, the base asphalt, the curb repairs, everything that we're asking to accept or that they're asking for us to accept have been completed. So they worked through all those deficiencies. Everything else is considered minor at this point and not warranted for us to hold up the process.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor? Carried. 8.1, special events approval. Councilor Levine?
I'll move the recommendation.
And second, Councilor Pouget. Councilor Frey?
Through
through you, Mr. Mayor, to the chief, I'll offer up my support and my hands at the event as well.
Is there any other questions or comments? Okay, all those in favor? Carried. 8.2, regarding the boarding kennels. Okay. First of all, is there a motion? I think we have some individuals who want to speak to it, so we might need it. It's moved. Councilor Pouget and second, Councilor Levine. All those in favor of allowing? Okay. Pass. You know what?
Mayor Tom Deemer, Amherstburg, Ontario. This law is recommended to be changed from 2,000 feet to 300 feet. I find that a little bit too much. I mean, there's a reason why it was at 2,000 feet in the first place, and it's going to be moved to 300. I don't think that's right. I'd like to ask for a couple of weeks to prepare properly to come in front of you if that's possible.
Okay. I guess we're looking for a deferral, but at this time I'll ask if there's any other comments before I go to council.
Here.
Yes, okay.
No. Mr. Mayor, council. I'm not a very good speaker.
If you could just start with your name.
Ernie Bezerra.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. This came to our attention, this amendment came to our attention on Saturday, which had no time for us to find proper documents and everything else about this. But like Tom said, it's supposed to go from 2,000 to 100 feet. 100 feet to a kennel that could have, I don't know how many dogs. And it's right on our property. Okay, 100 feet is not a buffer for noise. And if you have one dog that starts barking and you have 20 more that start in the middle of the night, it's not a very good situation. Okay? Now, the property in question has a lot of acres. It doesn't have to be in my backyard. And also, the dog run is in my backyard. So, we don't really have the proper design, what the design is, where it is. We have nothing. We only got this Saturday. We have nothing at all. And that's why I talked to my legal representative, and he says to ask for a 2-week contingency, or whatever you call it, delay, so that he can prepare something and find the proper thing. Because to go from 2,000 to 1,000 is a little bit drastic, in my opinion.
2,300.
No. They said they want to go 2,000 to 100, but somebody else said 300 is acceptable.
It says 300 right up there.
Well, it says to be adopted. Right now, what they have in front of them is 100, not 2, not 300. So, anyways, that's all I got to say.
Okay.
If you want to say, that's all it is.
Pretty much the same thing we spoke of. We're not prepared because we didn't find out till Saturday. We actually, it surprised us because we thought the people concerned were having a wine, were going to build a winery. So, to find this, like my husband says, it's in our backyard. The noise, the feces from the dog, we don't know. We don't know what it involves. And we request your decision to please help us and give us a couple of weeks to better prepare. Thanks to you.
Ms. Bezerra, could I get your first name?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah,
okay. All right. Thank you. Is there any other comments from the public? Okay, then I will go to council for some form of motion. Councilor Pouget?
A motion to defer for 2 weeks to give the speakers an opportunity to prepare this.
Is there a second? Councilor Melosh? Okay, I guess, deferrals are not debatable, right? Okay, deferrals are not debatable. All those in favor of a deferral? And that passes. 9.1, student hiring policy amendment? Councilor Levine?
I'll move the recommendation.
And Councilor Millar, second. Is there any questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor? Oh, sorry, Councilor Millar.
I guess the question. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The question directed to the administration is, why are we choosing to go to 1650 when the average was 1550? Why are we going on the upside of the high average?
I believe if you look at the 1650, you're looking at the full coordinator with 3 years experience with the town. There's Schedule A.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah. There's different appendixes here. We did undertake a review with all the local municipalities. Our recommendation in Appendix A for a summer student with 1 year experience is 1550. And it goes up with 2 years and 3 years. The most you're allowed to work for the town as a summer student is 3 years.
So 1650 is more because of the qualified position?
Yeah, to being a pool coordinator. So you have some supervisory responsibilities as a pool coordinator.
Okay.
Councilor Fryer?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. How many positions do we look at possibly hiring for this season?
23 is the number. Also, I do want to let council know that late Friday we did receive confirmation from the government that we will be receiving a grant of $17,342. So we will be reporting a positive variance on our summer students.
Councilor Pugia?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I just in response to a question raised by Councilor Amalaj, I too thought it was just on the high side until I remembered that the children or the students that are qualifying for the Lions School,
yes.
They're spending a lot of money and a lot of time getting qualified. They have to go through Bronze Medallion, Bronze Cross, Nationals, Leaders, Instructors, and it is a phenomenal amount of money, and 8 weeks at a time for at least, sometimes 4 weeks if they go to a couple times a week.
So any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor? Carried. 9.2, council question, number that. Councilor Levine?
Yeah, I'll move the recommendation.
And Councilor Fryer is a second. Any questions or comments? Councilor Pugia?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And it says that they requesting direction.
That's great.
But regarding this report, and I'm not sure that the public would know what number 20160307-101 council question would be, but I'm totally against charging, a homeowner that's lost their house or a structure due to fire to be charged again for the services of the Amherstburg Fire Department. These people are at the lowest point in their life when they lose a structure. They're totally devastated. And, they pay taxes to the town of Amherstburg. They pay high water rates, high sewage surcharge rates based on their water consumption. And to charge them again for attending a fire, I think is wrong. And I like it in the report, I really respect the fact that they stated that it's very possible these people might actually go and try to put the fire out themselves rather than call the fire department and pay for a fire call. So I'm against charging non-homeowners for this service.
Can I get some clarification from the fire department, perhaps, and legal or...
through you, Mayor, I can try and give you some clarification. There's a company that was going around, and I believe it in the Toronto area, Paul would probably know better than myself, that charged, go after cost recovery for structured fires. They go after the insurance company, not the homeowner. So if the insurer has this type of coverage, they will try and make some recovery costs based on that. I'm certainly not in favor of it. I believe that the taxpayers here pay for their fire service, and we shouldn't be charging them any extra down the road.
So if we went after them for insurance, there would also be a deductible as well, though. So there would still be a cost to the homeowner?
I'm going to defer that to the clerk.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. With respect to this report, if we were to implement this practice, we would only, for lack of a better word, charge the residents who have coverage for that type of loss and who have had a loss that is insurable. With respect to that, they would already be incurring a deductible.
Councilor Pryor?
So just to be clear, by receiving for information, we're not giving no direction at this time?
Unless there's a clarification on direction, then we are only receiving at this time?
And no, there will be no direction given, nothing in the report will be implemented. I want to make sure that's clear.
I would defer to the mover and the seconder to make sure that we're clear on that. There wasn't a second. Okay. Oh, did you?
To receive.
Okay, sorry. It was Councilor Pryor that was second. Okay. I thought so.
So I'm sure just to receive only.
Councilor Levine?
Yeah, I didn't put any direction in there.
So the motion was simply to receive. And so just on the report to receive, questions? Councilor Melange?
No, can we comment about it?
Sure.
Okay. I mean, I'm the one who put the original motion through. Yeah, we have to start the discussion, but
microphone.
Sorry, but I'm really not in favor of how it works. And Paula, our clerk, just mentioned one of the reasons why I'm not. If you have insurance, we'll charge your insurance company. If you don't have insurance, it goes away. Or, you know, we don't charge nobody, and we don't have to recoup any costs. Correct. And so we have a two-tier system, in terms of, so that I guess I'm against that as well. And the other thing too is further into your the background talks about overtime. So we're in a fire. Just living as a fire, and he gets charged at the regular rate because it's between 8 and 5, and I have a fire at my place, and it happens between 7 o'clock at night. And I'm into overtime for full time, and so there's logistical issues that just doesn't make sense to for recouping costs.
Councilor Levine, did you have a?
No, not
okay. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've heard all the comments, and I agree. I don't think it's the time to try to implement this. It's still not clear, and I don't think it's fair to the taxpayers if we were to implement it right now. Maybe down the road if some things change, possibly. But not now.
Okay, so I think the motion is to receive and we will not be charging the residents. All those in favor? Carried. 9.3, the Audit and Finance Advisory Committee. Councilor Pryor?
Put my name forward for the position.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else interested in the position? Okay. And do we need a vote or move the claim? Or? Okay, so if we could just move the motion with Councilor Fryer's name in there. Councilor Levine, second Councilor Melange. All those in favor? That is carried. 9.4, changes and impact of Bill 8. Councilor Levine?
I'll move the recommendation.
Thank you. Second was Councilor Melange. Is there any comments or questions? Okay, all those in favor? Carried. 9.5, recovery of emergency response fees for motor vehicle accidents. I believe this is probably the same issue. No, this is different. Okay. It is Councilor Levine.
I'll move the recommendation for discussion.
And second Councilor Melange and Councilor Levine.
So this, through you to the chief, this is a different animal here than the last one.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, to the council, absolutely. I'll give you a little bit of background on it. Everybody in the county of Essex, with the exception of, I don't know if Windsor does it or not yet, when they have their trucks respond to a motor vehicle accident, If that person is not a resident of that community, they will bill for cost recovery. And the cost recovery is based on a rate that the MTO pays. Because the province does not have a fire department, they will pay municipalities to respond to accidents and fires on their highways. So towns like LaSalle, Tecumseh, Lakeshore, Kingsville, Essex all respond to provincial highways. So they can bill the province $450 per hour per truck that they send to an accident. And the province pays that bill. For the roads that are non-highway, they just bill the insurance company direct.
So do you support this, that fully out?
Absolutely. For non-residents, absolutely.
Okay, that's all I need to know.
Mr. Till?
Also in the user fee bylaw, one of the user fees that was approved was specifically for this, for motor vehicle accidents for non-residents. That's all I believe this report's doing is giving the clerk the okay to go through the insurance, do the reports and go through the insurance company.
That's correct.
I can get some kickbacks.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor? Carried. And 9.6, Parks Canada Agreement for Canada Day. Councilor Melosh?
Move the recommendation.
And second, Councilor Levine. And any comments or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor? Carried. Brings us to the consent agenda. Councilor Levine.
I'll move items A through G be received.
And second, Councilor Fryer. And I guess we'll receive them first, and then maybe we can, if there's anything that we need to move on. So all those in favor of receiving, carried. And now if there's any that need to be addressed, Councilor Pluja.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number G, resolution to widen Highway 3 to improve public safety for the town of Essex. Just wondered if council would support that motion. Their resolution.
Thank you for bringing that up. It was addressed at the last county council meeting. It was agreed to unanimously by the people who attended that Highway 3 is obviously an issue of safety for this region. And the county, and I guess specifically Mayor McDermott, requested support in that respect. So that's why it's here. Second, Councilor Fryer. And Councilor Fryer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think a strong message should be sent by all municipalities in Essex County to the city and government, the Liberal Party, especially with Bruce Crozier's name on this highway. I think to stop it just at Essex and then see the resulting factors that happen by not having it a four-lane highway is a tragedy to everyone involved. And I really hope that the government stands up and looks at this project and gets the funding to Essex like it needs.
And is there any other comments or questions?
On that item?
Yes, on that item. Okay, all those in favor? Carried. And other items?
Aye.
Councilor Melosh?
Item B, which talks about, thank you, the Union Gas. I was just at a conference and Union Gas was actually speaking, talking about energy costs. And I guess we all have to be mindful of this new regulations coming to cap and trade that's coming through. And at the end of the day, they're recommending go hydro because of the carbon output or minimized carbon output from hydro versus Union Gas. So although, yes, we're promoting the use of gas, we have to keep in mind that down the road when this cap and trade comes along, the carbon tax, there'll be some rising costs in some areas. For those who are very conscious of the environment, the hydro is, although it's expensive, the better, and it could be at the end of the day a cheaper route. Just a point of information.
Okay. So that was just for information, no motion. Okay. Is there any other items anyone would like to discuss? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to 11, Heritage Committee meeting minutes. Councilor Levine?
I'll move the recommendation to minutes be received.
And second, Councilor Melosh, any questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor? Carried. Councilor Pujo? Yeah.
I'm sorry, I thought I had reviewed it better than I did, and I just saw it's something that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Regarding item 6.1, a Navy Yard Park, it states, and if I could question Mr. Melange, because he's on the Heritage Committee, mm-hmm. It states, Simon questioned if the Navy Yard Park is in fact going through for a heritage designation. A resolution was put forth that the park be designated back in September. A motion was put forth and is now in council's table. Steve Brown clarified that advisement must come from the committee if there is something being built on the designated portion of the park. That hasn't come before us yet, right? Regarding the designation of that park?
Through your worship, that's correct. I sent the letter as requested by council to get the Heritage Committee's input, and they will be assisting us in reviewing King's Navy Yard Park with regards to the heritage designation. So we've engaged the Heritage Committee to assist the town in doing so.
Any question?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a time frame for that? Because I know that Communities in Bloom, that is something that we would be really putting forward to the Communities in Bloom. That would be something they'd recommend, since heritage played such a significant role and are the reasons that we did receive the five blooms. So I just wondered if that would be coming, before the Communities in Bloom judges arrive at the end of July.
Through your worship, to Councillor Pujo, I'm relying on a lot of work being done by the members of the Heritage Committee who are volunteers. I would probably think that would not be coming before the end of July.
Councilor Melosh, do you have any further clarification on timelines?
No, not at all. Mr. Michelli really said it all.
Okay. I guess that's it then. Item 12, unfinished business. Any unfinished business items? Okay, Councilor Pujo.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Regarding the call center, call-in survey, I know that council has received some complaints about the survey, and I know that I experienced exactly what some of the complaints are, that it was difficult to hear or understand because of the language barrier, and also because it was speaking so low. And when I explained to them, and I'm only saying my concerns, I know we have received concerns from the other members of the public, and they asked for the youngest member of the family, and I thought that was very inappropriate, really, for a call center to ask for the youngest member of the family. And although I am the youngest member that lives in my office, I didn't think I could partake in it because I thought it would be a conflict. And my husband stayed on the phone for about 10 minutes, but he had to ask every question again and again, but she asked her to repeat it. And so I just wonder how many hang-ups, would we be able to find out? Are they surveying 300 homes? Or if they get a hang-up, is that counted as a dissatisfied customer? Or, just because it's a Canadian call center was hired, it doesn't mean it was based. It was Canadian-based. And this is taxpayers' money that's being spent on this, and this is going to be an integral part of our strategic plan. So I just wondered, I know that, I hope that there would be an investigation on this, and I'm just asking if the administration could look into this.
Rebecca?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I can look into all of those comments. The phone survey was finished very quickly, surprisingly very quickly, actually. The plan was to complete the survey when they had completed 300 completed surveys. So I had expected it to take much longer to get through phoning people until they completed 300 surveys. So it was a bit of a surprise that they finished it so quickly. I will follow up with all of the concerns that you've brought up this evening. This is only one component of many forms of public consultation that took place, a very small component, actually. We did rely on the public consultation, the surveys. We did get almost 500 responses that way, and this was just following up and validating that information that we received from the public, actually. But I did take notes while you were speaking right now, Councillor Puget, and I will follow up on those comments.
Thank you.
Councillor Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have the same sentiments. That I've heard some comments, some negative comments about the surveys. And when we're doing a statistical sampling, okay, where we're selecting a very narrow group, we got to make sure that, you know, we get a good, at least complete surveys. I don't know whether it's positive or negative, but they've got to be complete. So I'm concerned that about the quality of the sampling.
Okay,
thank you, Mr. Mayor. There has already been some communication back to our main consultant, MDB Insight, in this regard. When we do get the response and the report back from them, we've already asked for some focus and some communication back in this. So I will communicate further. I will let them know. We will be looking to hear back. How is this done? How many people completed the full survey? We will want to hear responses to all of these things. So I'm taking notes what you're saying, and we will be looking for responses to these comments.
Councilor Craig?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't want to flog this, but what was the youngest age if the person was 5-10 years old? Well, I want the youngest member in the family. So you got a 10-year-old on the phone? Like, what was it that they're asking for? If they're asking for the youngest, I just a question back, maybe that can come back to council. What were they looking for? Because that's not going to give a good demographic of, doesn't matter who answers the phone. Maybe you can give us a range of what your age is, instead of saying, I want the youngest. You know, and then one of the particular questions, you know, they're asking this or that. It just seems odd that they would ask just for the youngest person.
Mr. Mayor, this evening was the first time I had heard anything about we want the youngest person in the household. I am fully aware that they were looking for you have to be a minimum of 18 years old to participate in the survey. So I am aware that we were looking for you have to be a minimum of 18 to participate in the survey. But that was the expectation that I was aware of for the survey participation.
Okay. Is there any other items? Councillor Puget?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not sure if this falls under unfinished or new business. I did check with administration for this. I do have a motion here.
I think that's the, is that regarding the plaque?
No, it is regarding a place of residency. I have received some concerns regarding some members of our committees and not living in our town of Amherstburg, so I'm prepared to make a motion if that's okay.
I think it would fall under new business.
Okay.
So if I could just ask if there's any other unfinished business from the list. Okay. Seeing no further unfinished business, then we can go to new business. Councillor Puget? Councillor Long?
Yes.
Oh, after, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to make a motion to direct administration to report to council regarding the residency of council appointees on boards and committees.
Just direction, right? Direction. Not doing take that as, or is it notice? No,
just
direction. Okay, is there a second? Councillor Lean, second. And Councillor Levine.
Did we not vet through that process when we made the appointments? Was that not part of the... So why is there suddenly an issue.
Through your worship, the Council Levine, there has been some change for some of the composition of some of the committees of residencies or changing in jobs. So this would be a process for us to go through and confirm if there has been those changes and let council know so that council can make a decision.
Okay, is there any further clarification required? Okay, all those in favor? Carried. And is there any other new business? Councilor Melange?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On April the 8th, I attended a conference, the Ontario Farmland Trust Conference. The Ontario Farmland Trust is an organization whose focus is on farmland protection. Their activities include working with landlords to develop agreements, stewardships, easements, and land donations. Their work also includes policy development, research, and education for the purpose of farmland protection. A statistic that blew me away was the fact that daily, 350 acres of agricultural land in Ontario are lost to development. To put that into perspective, that means every 131 days a municipality the size of Amherstburg is lost to development. That's every 131 days, we lose a whole municipality. This Farmland Trust focuses on trying to get some protection. Farmland Trust recognizes that agricultural land is important to the well-being of Ontario. From an economic perspective, farmland supports a wealth of agricultural food and related activities in both urban and rural communities. Across Ontario, there is a need for strategic protection of agricultural lands to sustain economic development. From a local perspective, farmland contribute to the ability to produce local food and achieve food self-sufficiency. From a sustainable community's perspective, looking at planning with the view of more efficient use of land, of urban land, shifting away from urban sprawl to more higher density development, thus minimizing the expansive infrastructure and services. And lastly, from an environmental perspective, benefits to farmland preservation are the protection and provision of natural and cultural heritage, which include clean air, water, wildlife habitat. The conference pointed out to me the need to look at our planning and land use strategy. Yes, land is a key component to our growth. The question is, are we using it wisely? Do we truly understand the effects, both in the short term and long term, of losing more and more farmland? Thank you.
Okay, Councilor Fryer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I know it's we just dealt with it, maybe new or old, but I just wanted to highlight a little bit more, maybe for council, the media, the residents, of the annual police bike rodeo that I will be attending. This is very important. Now that the spring's come, now that young kids are going to be getting on our bikes, and I think kudos goes to Amherstburg and the police department for helping kids do bike safety and things along those lines. And I hope with all the new infrastructure we're putting in, it was talked about before by some counselors, but I'd like to see us start painting where bikes belong. Because right now on Sandwich Street with that nice wide area, we're having people pass each other thinking that it's a four lane when it's only an actual two lane. So I think once we can get some paint on different sections so people can see where bikes belong, and a lot of people, there's a misconcept nomer about bicycles. They belong in the sidewalks. They don't. For little kids under 16, 18 inches, yes. For adults, you do not belong on the sidewalk. You belong on the road. So I think kudos again to the police department, and I'll be there to lend a hand however I can in supporting this event.
Councilor Pugin.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Councilor Fryer. But please correct me if I'm wrong. When they made the trails from Alma to Laird, Dalhousie, Lowe's, and Fryer, and now they're trying to extend it down Melange. Those trails, although they were sidewalks, they were supposed to be for bike lanes, bikes also.
Yeah, it's multi-use. Those are multi-use,
okay.
But they're on the road.
They're not
a separate sidewalk.
No, those are sidewalks. Those are extra wide sidewalks, and they were at that time I recall very vividly, although I wasn't on council, they stated that those wide sidewalks were for use of bikes and wheelchairs and pedestrians. And so I just want to make sure that we're not just stating something that isn't entirely factual. If before they were for bikes and pedestrians, and now you're supposed to be on the road.
Here's a, Mr. Mayor, sure. Bit of clarification. For kids, for 18 inches and smaller, the tires, the rims, are to be on those sidewalks. For anybody bigger, so adults, you're supposed to be on the road. That's the under the Highway Traffic Act, that's what you're supposed to be doing. That's why we have right now in Ontario a law that just passed under the Highway Traffic Act, and I was speaking to the mayor prior to, as a cyclist, I want to get shirts made for local cyclists that go through our area that have the vehicle and a 1.5 meter to the cyclist. So you're supposed to pass right now, and it's the law, or else you will get a ticket, 1.5 meters around on the road. So any children, any families that use the sidewalk, which you're saying back, you know, that were made, those are multi-purpose for young kids. But for adults, you're supposed to be on the road.
Maybe we could just go to administration to review what the intent was. I think I'm understanding the area we're talking about, and it was my understanding that there were sidewalks, because as they clearly look like sidewalks and not multi-use paths, but
for young kids.
Yeah.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I can bring back a report outlining exactly what they were intended to be used as. I know for Sandwich Street, when we repaved that, we ended up paving a lot more than we had intended. So there was never actual bike lanes to be painted because we weren't meeting the true intent of a bike lane at the time when we did the design. However, then it was decided to pave most of that shoulder, and it ended up looking more like a second lane. So there is some confusion there. We can look into that as well.
Councilor Melosh?
I wonder if it's possible, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wonder if it's possible also to, in your report, to sort of what Councilor Fryer is talking about, to enlighten us a little more on where, you know, where bikes are supposed to be, I guess, within our community. You know, whether it's part of the Highway Traffic Act, you know, certain age, certain size, whatever. At least, you know, since bikes is becoming more and more of an issue, if we get complete clarification, we all understand the, you know, the proper or procedures for bikes, or I say procedures, regulations. Thank you.
Okay. Do you want a formal direction on that, or? I'm just going to defer to council. Okay, Councilor Puget, second. Councilor Melosh, all those in favor? Carried. And sounds like we'll probably have an education component to go with that. Any other new business? Okay, brings us to notice of motion. Councilor Puget, and she's already made the motion, so I would say, is there a seconder? Councilor Fryer, and is there any discussion on Councilor Puget?
I'd just like to explain why I made this notice motion and bringing forward this motion tonight. The town of Amherstburg has always been very proud of perhaps one of our most famous and highly respected residents, the Honorable Eugene Whalen, fondly called the Senator. We are well aware of Senator Whalen's accomplishments from being born into a poor family in a log cabin in July of 1924 until his death at 88 years of age on February 19, 2013. Our residents followed Senator Whalen's endeavors from his election to the local separate school board at the age of 21, and when he became reeve for our amalgamated Anderton Township and warden of Essex County Council, before being elected to the Liberal Party as a member of Parliament in 1962 to 1984. Senator Whalen was president of the World Food Council, Minister of Agriculture, and was appointed to the Senate from 1996 to 1999. We are all aware of the numerous committees and boards he was actively involved with, and the awards this Senator received are too numerous to mention. The citizens of Amherstburg were especially fortunate to observe our very own resident's personal side. We observed his love for his wife, Elizabeth, of more than 50 years, and their three daughters, Terry, Susan, and Kathy. We watched him take his young family to church, restaurants, weddings, funerals, and numerous functions. In later years, we noticed his affection to his son-in-laws and grandchildren. He was so proud of all of them and very happy when his daughter, Susan, followed in her father's footsteps to Ottawa as a member of parliament from 1993 to 2004. We were well aware of the overwhelming support and help their family provided to those in need in Amherstburg, especially the immigrants who came to our community in desperate need of jobs, our farmers, his constituents, and his involvement with the development of King's Navy Yard Park and the K. Walter Rantum Arena. We love to see our kind, gentle giant in his green steps and gracing the towns and activities in our gracing the streets and activities in our town. Yes, we the people of Amherstburg have recognized and appreciated most of the accomplishments of our favorite senator, but perhaps we have missed one of his most important roles in society. According to an article that appeared in the Windsor Star several years ago, written by Dr. C. Lloyd Brown John, titled Gorbian Gene, Dr. Brown John points out the significance of the role of Senator and Mrs. Elizabeth Whalen, who befriended the Soviet leaders and hosted a dinner party at their home to introduce their guests, former Soviet Ambassador Alexander Yakovlev, and soon to become Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev, to our local officials. It has been verified that Senator Whalen arrived home more than 2 hours late for his own dinner party because he had to remain for a vote in the House of Commons. While waiting for their host to arrive, the two Soviet gentlemen asked their hostess, Mrs. Whalen, if there was some place they could talk privately. Mrs. Whalen directed them to her backyard. This is where the walk that changed the world took place. This significant historical event has been reported by Alexander Yakovlev himself in a book about his life as an ambassador. A book was also written by Christopher Shulkin titled Walk That Changed the World. Our very own Mr. Paul Hertel has also done extensive research regarding this incident. It is alleged that during this walk in the Whalen's backyard, Alexander Yakovlev convinced Mikhail Gorbachev the importance of perestroika, which means restructuring, and glasnost, meaning openness or transparency. In 1990, Mikhail Gorbachev became president of the Soviet Union, and his idea for restructuring and openness that was planted in the premier's mind at the Whalen's Amherstburg residence resulted in massive change throughout the Soviet Union. I am requesting that Amherstburg Town Council pass a motion to fund and erect a plaque or a historical edifice in honor of the late Senator Eugene Whalen and his wife, Mrs. Elizabeth Whalen, at their home on Front Road North for their role in entertaining the former Soviet Ambassador Alexander Yakovlev and the former Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev while visiting our historical town, marking the location of the walk that changed the world.
Okay. Is there any other questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor? Carried. Councilor Pooja?
And I believe I already spoke about this to administration, but that the Whalen family have, given they're very pleased that council would even consider this, but they asked if they could be involved in the regarding the plaque and where it's placed on their front lawn of their residence.
For sure, through your worship, to Councilor Pooja, we'll have to have some discussions with the Whalen family because we'll probably have to seek an easement on the property to ensure that when we put the sign up, we'll be able to maintain it in perpetuity.
Okay.
And I also want to mention that I had been working on this a couple years ago, but because of, as a direct result of Dr. Lloyd Brown John's reports where he, you know, he stated, why is there not a single historic marker or monumental edifice marking the location where one of the 20th century's major game-changing conversations occurred? And that's what brought it to my attention. And at the time, I was working with CAO at that time and also with the Whalen family. But because of unfortunate circumstances, everything just sort of, died down. And then, and I understand that our deputy mayor was also working on it, I believe, and went to Mr. Hertel and asked for him to research it, and he did. And I called the deputy mayor and asked him if he wanted to proceed with it. But because of time, problems with him, he told me to proceed. I did try to go to the Heritage Committee because I thought it would be more effective and more more appropriate coming from them, but they were not allowed to deal with it because it wasn't within their mandate. So that's why it's before council.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. That brings us to item 15.1, the confirmatory bylaw. Councilor Pryor?
So moved.
And second, Councilor Levine. All those in favor? Carried. Motion to go in camera. Councilor Levine? Second. Sorry. You got to read it, yeah?
I'll move the council move in camera directly following this session pursuant to Section 239 of the Municipal Act 2001 as amended for the following reasons. Item A, volunteer firefighters, county employees, Section 239 2D, labor relations or employee negotiations.
Second, Councilor Frye. All those in favor? Carried. And is there any pecuniary interest on this item? Seeing none, we will go on camera. Motion to resume, Councilor Levine, Councilor Pryor, all those in favor? Carried. The clerk will read the motion.
Council met in camera to discuss volunteer firefighters, item A, under Section 239-2D of the Act. And the following motion is before council for consideration: that the town employees also working as volunteer firefighters for the Amherstburg Fire Department be allowed to attend fire calls during their normal hours of work without payment of the usual $52 per call rate, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to execute a letter of understanding between the town of Amherstburg and the IBEW Local 636 to allow the town employees also working as volunteer firefighters to attend fire calls during normal hours of work without pay from the Amherstburg Fire Department.
Moved by Councilor Pryor, second by Councilor Puget. All those in favor? Carried. Motion to adjourn. Councilor Levine, Councilor Melosh, all those in favor? Carried.